Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
All righty, yes, indeed. And welcome back to another Tuesday evening here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, bringing to you our Red Zone Blitz program. Frat House Mike here. Brandon over on the other side.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Here.
All right, good. Getting a little staticky there. I didn't know whether we had you or not. But good.
Nope.
Glad to hear that. And bringing you all the, well, I guess we're just going to review and break down and take a look at where things stand as we just concluded 25% of the NFL season. It's hard to believe, hard to imagine,
wow, really?
But it's the truth. Yeah. Four games, that's 4 weeks. Underway, in the books, done, kaput, done, over with. 25% of the season is already finished. We sit around, seems like waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. And just like that, we're into the, we're making our way towards the first half as we go into the second quarter of the season.
That seems almost unbelievable.
It sure does. It absolutely does.
When you put it into percentage form.
You know, I was going to open with a real quick question because I do want to I want to make sure that we get the number out for everybody. You know, I'm sitting back and we're talking about it being the 25th or the 25% of the season being concluded. And I got to be honest, I think one of the most ludicrous, ridiculous statistics, and I don't even know if it's really legitimately a statistic, that has become part of our media makeup with regard to, I think it really started with the NFL and it has since gone down and it has infiltrated every other sport, Major League Baseball, all the way down to NASCAR. And that's the power rankings. It's got to be, in my opinion, it's without a doubt one of the most ridiculous exercises in futility and nonsense I've ever looked at. And yet, we're all compelled when they come out. We sit back and we go, oh, let's see what the power rankings are. And yet I sit here and I go, you know something? I don't give a damn what the power rankings look like. This is absolutely stupid. I'm looking at week four. They just broke this afternoon. We got two teams at the very top of the power rankings who didn't even play last week. Yeah, that's right. They were on bye. The Cincinnati Bengals and the Arizona Cardinals are number one and number two. The Chargers are number three. Seattle Seahawks are number four. Broncos number five. They didn't play last week. Eagles number six. And this is the NFL's. And what's crazy about the whole damn thing is that you'll get one from Fox Sports. You'll get one from ESPN. Everybody's got their own set of power rankings. The whole thing is stupid, folks. Do you check into them? 347-826-9964. I open it up with the question, and there's the number. 347-826-9964. If at any time during the course of this evening you want to jump in and give us your thoughts on power rankings, do they really mean anything? But do you check them out? Are you looking at those and going, and when you see your team in, say, the top three, are you sitting there going, see that? See that? My team's pretty darn good. Any quick thoughts on it, Brandon, real quick, before we get into our games for the week?
Well, most of the time it's just a compilation of, the reporters for each individual network you know, signing in on what they have. I mean, I've used to pay attention to ESPNs a little bit because, you know, I kind of feel, you know, a lot of their guys like Schefter and Mortensen and them are some of the better, you know, broadcast or, well, not broadcasters, but like news guys. So, you know, they're more in touch with the league. But honestly, you know, it's just for entertainment purposes, I think. You know, like you said, if your team's up higher, moves up, you know, you puff out your chest a little bit. My team's personally on its way down on that power. They've probably been the lowest they've been on the power rankings in 10 years, so maybe even longer.
Now, you know this because you checked.
No, I'm just.
Oh, come on, now be honest. You did check.
I'm guessing. Trying to get to it as we speak.
They're ranked 18th. NFL power rankings. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty bad.
That's the NFL. But listen, you know, fear not, because you could go over to ESPN and find out, you know, that, say, I don't know, maybe they're ranked 14th.
Maybe.
Your thoughts, folks, 347-826-9964. We do have a gaggle of games here. I guess ones that I kind of titled as big games and upsets. And we're going to try to get through as many of them as we possibly can. I guess maybe without going into a heck of a lot of depth on each one of them. And one that I don't know if we necessarily have to go into a lot of analysis on was the game that opened up the week last week, Brandon, and that was between the New York Giants and the Washington Redskins. Now, the NFC East, and we're going to talk a little bit about the NFC East a little bit this evening, simply because all of a sudden there's a lot of people out there that are saying, see, this division isn't exactly up for grabs now, is it? The Giants and the Redskins met on a Thursday night game. And Washington, let me just check this. Yeah, Washington was favored to win that one by 3.5. And as it turned out, Washington was never in the game at all. 45-14, Giants won that game. And suddenly all the Giants fans came out of the woodwork and said, see that? Eli still got it, and we're still relevant. 45-14. Holy smokes. You know, Kirk Cousins the week before played very, very well against that Eagles team. Probably should have won that game. You know, you can look at it both sides of the ball. And a lot of people were saying, well, the Washington Redskins are going to be a lot better team without RG3. Let Kirk Cousins run things, and everything's going to be A-OK. Well, that wasn't the case Thursday night. Was this a situation where it was just a short week for the Redskins?
Well, I don't know if it was just a short week for the Redskins. It was, you know, the same short week for the Giants. I think the difference is, you know, the Giants were at home. That does help you a little bit in the shortened week, I would imagine, because you don't have to travel. Granted, Washington to New York's not a huge travel, but it's still a bit of a travel during the day, I'm sure. I'm not sure how they would even get there. Probably I would think they'd still go by air, but you never know because it is short enough. You know, there are other options out there, but I mean, it comes down to basically this game came down to four players. Eli Manning had a great game, as you had brought out, four touchdowns. Their tight end Larry Donald, who nobody ever heard of before this week, who's now probably the most picked up fantasy player in football for the week, had three touchdowns. Not a lot of yards; they were all short, you know, red zone type touchdowns, but nonetheless, still had three scores. And for the Giants, Victor Cruz actually looked like he sort of played a game. Had 100 yards on six catches, so you know he was back. And you already pointed out the other on the Redskins side, Kirk Cousins just had a horrible day.
Yeah,
four interceptions. It was just dreadful to watch. Some of the decisions were just awful.
Absolutely a mirror of what Eli Manning did. Manning had four touchdowns, one interception. Cousins had one touchdown and four interceptions. So they mirrored each other. But aside from that one interception that Eli Manning had, he could have had a damn near perfect game when it came to QB rating. And he ended up with 117.5 and went 28 of 39 for 300 yards right on the nose. Really almost darn near a perfect game. Let's take a look at another one. And this was one that we had talked about on our Thursday night program on our Frat House Sports Show. And we all put our picks in for it. And I think, well, I'll step back for a moment and mention, yes, I was the only one that picked the Green Bay Packers over the Chicago Bears. Green Bay won that one pretty much walking away, 38-17. It seems to me this goes right back to my conversations that I've had so many times about Jay Cutler, who ended the game with an 82.5 QB rating, two touchdowns and two interceptions. Really pedestrian, very, very pedestrian performance. Aaron Rodgers, unlike the week before, looked very, very good. My goodness, yeah, he might have been sacked, but it was for 0 yards, so we didn't see him getting up off the turf too many times. 22 of 28 for 302 yards and four touchdowns, but still, yep. No running game. No running game in this one. It seems to me, Brandon, that's going to continue to be a thorn in Green Bay's side. Yes, they won against Chicago, but without a running game, they're still not going to be one of the top teams in the NFL.
Well, you're right, but if you go back to our conversation last Tuesday, we were trying to figure out, you know, what can Green Bay do with their line, and what did they do? A lot of quick, timing plays from Rodgers to all of his receivers. I mean, Jordy Nelson had 10 catches, Randall Cobb had 7. You know, he spread the ball around his main two guys, and they, you know, both had 2 touchdowns, both had over 100 yards. You know, that's what they needed to do. Now, granted, you're right, they still have no running game, and I don't think there's going to be a quick fix for that. There may not be a fix this year. And you kind of pointed out on the other side of the ball, you know, Cutler, you know, you're right. He kind of is, you know, you never know which week he's going to show up on. And, you know, Matt Forte, you know, had a quiet 100-yard rushing game. Didn't seem like he had the yards he does looking at the stats. You know, he had 23 carries for 122 yards. That generally means you're going to win, especially when your second back has 14 for, you know, 72. You have two guys almost in the, you know, 100-yard range there, and they still lost the game. I mean, Cutler threw 2 picks, but, you know, I don't know. I think what it just came down to is Aaron Rodgers, you know, it was a back and forth first half. I think they just outlasted Chicago and started pulling away in the second half, and Chicago couldn't answer anymore for whatever reason. You know, we've seen shootout games like that where one team, you know, keeps it going and the other one kind of loses its steam. Well, I think the second half for the Bears, you know, the Packers might have adjusted a little bit to what they were doing, but the Packers were able to keep going on offense and, you know, gave them the victory.
Important game, though, for the Packers is it brought them to 2-2, put them in a tie for second place. We've got a virtual three-way tie right now for second place. Green Bay, Chicago, and Minnesota, all 2-2. We're going to talk about Minnesota in a moment. Detroit right now leads that division 3-1. Very, very tight situation, as I pointed out, one quarter already through the season. But a bigger game, I think, for Green Bay to win than it was for Chicago. I think one of the games, though, that, well, aside from that Minnesota game, which we will get to in a couple of moments, one of the other games, though, that kind of had everybody sitting up and going, what in the world is going on here, had to be that big upset of Tampa Bay Buccaneers beating the Pittsburgh Steelers 27-24. And, you know, the week before, we're all led to, and I was myself, I've been making the predictions all season long. Well, you know, this Pittsburgh Steelers is this season away from probably looking at tearing that team apart and completely rebuilding it. Last week, I'm kind of stepping away from that prediction going, oh, I don't know, maybe Roethlisberger is all that. Maybe he's got him, you know, he's got this team put together and maybe everything's going all right. You know, to look at this one, you would have to say, well, Pittsburgh didn't really play badly. I think Tampa Bay just played way over their head. Backup quarterback in there, Mike Glennon, 21 of 42, 302 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Roethlisberger didn't have a bad day himself with 120.2 QB rating, 29 of 43, 14, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But take a look at the number of sacks. Roethlisberger was hit by that Tampa Bay defense 5 times. Was that the difference in the game, the defense?
No, possibly. I mean, you know, look at the two quarterbacks. I mean, Roethlisberger's never been known for his mobility either. And as you pointed out, you know, that team's getting a little older and their offensive line may be an area that is starting to show its age a little bit as we're getting, you know, 25% into the season as we talked at the top of the show. I don't know that, you know, I think they're going to kind of just hover around mediocrity, maybe finish, you know, 8-8, 9-7 at this point. Their division's not particularly super, but it's also not, you know, a cakewalk either. I mean, you got the Bengals and the Ravens who are both looking pretty, you know, off to a pretty good start. So
mm-hmm.
I think Pittsburgh, I think your initial analysis on Pittsburgh is correct. I think they're, you know, basically a year away from certainly retooling. They have a lot of age at a lot of positions that are key. You know, the line, offensive line being one of them, and Ben Roethlisberger, you know, he needs to be protected, especially the older he gets.
Real quick on speculation, let's just say for a moment that Pittsburgh finds their way into, say, a wild card situation. And albeit, I agree with you. I think that might be a little bit remote. But let's say they do. Does this team forestall any retooling, or do they go ahead with it? I would think they'd go ahead with retooling this team because that's exactly what it seems to me they need.
I think they have some decisions to make, and I think Roethlisberger's at the top of it. I think his contract situation is in flux for next year. I think they have the Pittsburgh Steelers have a pretty big decision to make prior to it. I don't know if he's under contract for next year or if there's a big option bonus due, but I remember hearing at the beginning of the year this could be it for Ben in Pittsburgh. And, you know, if they feel he's a little, you know, aged or, you know, starting to show his age a little, you know, you may see that. I don't see Ben Roethlisberger playing well into his late 30s, early 40s like other guys have just because of his, you know, his overall ability. He's a little bigger quarterback. He's never been the most mobile. He does take a lot of hits. And if you remember, I don't know if you remember or not, but when he was in his rookie season, had a tremendously bad motorcycle accident where he drove his really high horsepower motorcycle into the front of a minivan. And,
right.
You know, that kind of, you know, toll in your body on top of, you know, the NFL or prior to even the NFL, you know, that's not a good thing. So, you know, I don't see him having the kind of longevity like of a Favre who played. He played pretty well into his 40s. Peyton Manning's pretty close to getting to that level, and I think he still should be okay. You know, Tom Brady, as we're going to talk about later, well, who knows? The jury may be out on that one, but
right.
I still think that that's a little too quick to say. But Roethlisberger, go ahead.
Roethlisberger's
decision may come for him from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It sitting and watching, you know, we talked about it so many times here on Frat House Sports and at the Frat House Sports Network, how the NFL has changed over the past number of seasons and how we've watched that whole nouveau quarterback creep into the league.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Roethlisberger is so interesting to watch a Pittsburgh game because as you're sitting there watching it, you almost do feel like you've been thrown back in time a bit watching Jurassic Park with him back there because he really, really does resemble Terry Bradshaw so much. That typical, he ain't moving out of a pocket. And if there ain't one there for him, guess what? Well, the rest of the team's going to suffer with him. So it really is interesting. I could see, you know, let's just say for a moment that he's not with Pittsburgh in the near future. The best this guy's doing is backing somebody up someplace. That's all he's going to be from Pittsburgh, will be a backup. That would be my prediction. Anyhow.
Oh, I would agree. I don't think any team's going to make him a starter unless there's another offense very, very similar running out there currently. But other than that, I wouldn't. He could be like your Vinny Testaverde type, who, you know, he hung on a long time as a backup. And when he came in, he was mildly effective at times. Again, late into his, you know, mid-40s. I believe he was playing at 44 when Testaverde finally hung it up. But I don't know, you know, if Ben's going to have that kind of staying power. But I think he's not too far from the clipboard. I think he's going to be carrying it pretty soon. You may see it within the next year or two. If something isn't worked out that he stays at Pittsburgh for next season, you may see it as early as next season.
Just my opinion. Yeah, I might agree with you. Let's go over and take a look at a game that, well, a lot of people in this area had circled on their calendar for a couple of reasons. And that was the, at least at the beginning of Sunday, the 3-0 unbeaten Philadelphia Eagles going out to San Francisco to go up against the 1-2 San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco won that game 26-21. And suddenly everybody in the Philadelphia region is ready to jump off their roofs, thinking that this team is just a mess. They can't stop anything. Nick Foles is a fraud. Their defense sucks. There's no offensive line, and the whole team is just washed up. It just blows me away. Absolutely blows me away how they go back and forth. But let's just take a look at it real quick. Nick Foles was 21 of 43 for 195 yards. I would not call this a spectacular day. No touchdowns, two interceptions, and a 42.3 QB rating. What in the world is going on with the running game? Well, one would be able to point to the offensive line, which right now has three backups in there, folks. Yeah, three. So is if anybody's wondering why you can't get a running game going, well, might be that. It might not have anything to do with McCoy at all. Kaepernick, on the other hand, 17 of 30. It was a Kaepernick. It's a Kaepernick performance. I don't think he's all that. I really don't. 218 on the ground, two touchdowns. Or in 218 in the air, two touchdowns, one interception, 87.9 QB rating. It was enough for San Francisco to get a win, get back to 2-2. It was a 5-point win. That's all it was, folks. And really, the Eagles almost darn near won it with just seconds left in the game, except for the fact that they just couldn't get it in from what, the 1.5 yard line, huh? That's where everybody right now is really coming down on the Eagles. Thoughts on that, Brandon?
Yeah, I think people are getting a little crazy. I mean, yeah, they're still 3-1. San Francisco really needed this game more so than the Eagles did in their division. They got Seattle and Arizona out in the West that are just putting, you know, making 2-2 as their record. You know, they're in third place. They lose this game, you know, they're in dire straits almost. 25% way into the season. So, you know, a lot of times you'll see this where one team needs it more than the other in a close game, and the team that needs it's going to get it somehow, some way. The other thing that if you look at this game, the Eagles had four turnovers. You already mentioned the two Nick Foles interceptions. Riley Cooper and Zach Ertz also had fumbles. And they didn't come at good times in the game. None of the turnovers came at great time for the Eagles. And, you know, that's part of what led to, you know, the loss here. One other area which I think is going to be improving over the next several weeks for the Eagles is going to be the offensive line in the rushing game. They're getting Lane Johnson back this week off of PED suspension. Everything I've read sounds like he's been keeping himself in shape and he should be ready to plug right back in. And Kelsey, you know, every week goes by is going to get closer to coming back from his I think he had a sports hernia type thing. So hopefully
be a couple of weeks, though.
Well, yeah, he's still a couple weeks away, but he's, you know, every week's closer. You get Johnson back, and then a couple weeks, you might get, Kelsey back. And then, you know, all of a sudden, the Eagles are in the NFC East, which isn't the strongest, although Dallas has been looking good. Giants looked terrible the first 2 weeks. You and I were saying it was the worst team in the league, and then all of a sudden, they look like world beaters. So NFL's, you know, peaks and valleys. That's the way it always is in the NFL.
Schizophrenic.
Yep. I mean, you go from looking like the worst team on the planet to, you know, looking like one of the best ever, you know, in a matter of days for the Giants. I mean, they really did. I guess the week before they actually had a little bit better, looked a little better too. So, but, you know, what I'm saying is this isn't hurting the Eagles. The Eagles are fine. I still think the Eagles are going to win the East. I think Dallas is going to come back to earth. Tony Romo, once November's done, he's done. So that, you know. That'll do Dallas in at the end of the year as normal. And, you know, the Eagles, they should be getting healthier as they go, you know, getting offensive linemen back, et cetera. And I think they're going to go. I mean, they have Zach Ertz is looking good as a younger tight end. Josh Matthews, a receiver, looking good. They don't have the big deep threat like they had with DeSean Jackson, but Macklin and Cooper are doing enough. I think the team's going to be fine. One loss is not enough to, you know, jump off a bridge or anything, as they like to say in Philadelphia.
I would say this to any Philadelphia fan out there, and I dare you to call me up right now, 347-826-9964, and tell me otherwise. When the schedule came out, you circled this game and you said, that's a loss. Uh-huh. That's exactly what you said. Don't tell me you said otherwise. You said it's a loss. Let's take it and let's go. Move on to game five. That's where I take it. Let's go take a look at it. Boy, oh boy, this one, you want to talk about an upset, you want to talk about a shocker, You want to talk about a little good luck and good fortune for one frat house Mike when it comes to a fantasy team? How about the Minnesota Vikings beating the Atlanta Falcons 41-28 with a rookie quarterback under center for the full game, and that was Teddy Bridgewater, 19-30, 317 yards. No, he didn't have any touchdowns, but no, he didn't have any interceptions either. Good thing there. Ended up with a QB rating of 98.9. Rushing game was moving for Minnesota. One would think, I guess they got that kid Asiata moving. How about Jerick McKinnon was moving? That's who was moving. 18 carries, 135 yards. Asiata, though, did have the three touchdowns. I'll tell you, I guess less the fact that Minnesota won this game, I think what kind of shocked me a bit was Atlanta losing. You know, not that Minnesota won it, but that Atlanta lost it and lost it as bad as they did, Brandon. I really thought, and we've gone back and forth with this with Atlanta, you know, are we going to see in 2014, are we going to see the 2012, Falcons, or are we going to see, you know, the 2013 version of the Falcons? And I think that Falcons fans have got to be sitting out there going, we're not sure yet.
Well, I would agree. I think you don't know for sure yet. I mean, they're sitting at 2-2s. It's certainly a better start than last year. I think they're 0-4 this year, this time last year. I believe they started 0-8 until they finally started to win a few games. So they're doing a little better. And for through three quarters, this score was 28-27 Atlanta. So, okay, they lost. You know, Minnesota outlasted them. Matt Ryan had a couple turnovers towards the end of the game. Probably weren't the best. One other thing you need to consider, too, I'm not knocking Bridgewater. I'm not knocking anything. They had no film on Bridgewater, no live game film. Nobody did. Mm-hmm. It was just really his first game. He finished the other game. So, you know, they weren't necessarily sure what they were in for, what kind of attack. I don't know that Bridgewater is going to look worse moving forward, but teams are going to be able to prepare for him a little bit, especially the more games he gets on film. Now, he did hurt his ankle at the end of this game, and they do have a Thursday game, so he may not even be playing this week. It just depends. It's a short week for the Minnesota Vikings, and, you know, the sprained ankle. He hasn't practiced at all yet, but that doesn't necessarily mean nothing because it is a short week. We'll have to see. MRIs were all negative, so it's not going to be a long-term injury for Bridgewater. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen this week. It's a division game. I don't know. You know, the NFC North is, you know, pretty much in flux. I think all the teams are 2-2, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, they may
Lions.
Be looking at this game. The Lions ahead of them.
Yeah, Lions are 3-1 and lead the North right now.
Okay.
But
the Lions are a game ahead. But everybody else, it's pretty even. So, you know. I don't think they want to give this up. It is a division matchup against, you know, the Green Bay Packers. So, you know, whoever wins this game is still obviously alive in the division. So they don't want to give it up. So, you know, I don't know what we're going to see. It is in Green Bay. So even if Bridgewater is healthy enough to go, is it a smart move? You know, I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah,
there.
I guess one of the numbers from this game that jump out at me, between the two teams combined, almost 1,000 yards, 960-plus yards of offense. Both defenses decided to go to Pizza Hut or something for the game because nobody was there. I mean, there was virtually no defense on either side of the ball in this game. Atlanta had 411 yards. Minnesota had 558 yards of offense. We talk about the rushing game, 241 rushing for Minnesota. Bridgewater, despite the fact not having a touchdown, 317 yards in the air. So not shabby. Not shabby at all.
No, I'm not knocking his performance at all. And I'm not trying to minimize it by saying they didn't have film. I was just pointing that out that, you know, when you don't have it, it's tough for defenses to prepare for it. And the Falcons, they're not the greatest defense in the NFL. They're mid-pack at best. So, you know, it can be expected. Right. I do want to go back to something you said about the Vikings running attack. They had two potent backs, which clearly shows you, you know, Adrian Peterson might be a talented back, but they know how to run the ball in Minnesota. They got good, you know, their offensive line can clearly run block, And, you know, they put the ball in the end zone four times, actually, if you count Bridgewater's rushing touchdown. So, you know, that's pretty solid. And, you know, that's enough to give a rookie quarterback some, you know, confidence and, you know, something to fall back on, knowing you have that ability. So I think if it, you know, we may not see Bridgewater this week. Christian Ponder comes in there. Wouldn't it be a great story? He comes in there and goes into Green Bay and wins a game. I'm not saying he's going to, but that kid, Christian Ponder's gotten beat up the last few years. You know, media in Minnesota, not been what they expected when they drafted him. You know, they still kept him as a third-string quarterback. I mean, you know, clearly they're going in a different direction just by drafting Bridgewater. You know, you don't even give, you know, Ponder the chance of, you know, catching on somewhere else and, you know, maybe a change of scenery will do him. But he didn't play horrible. He just wasn't great. You know what I mean? He was one of those, you know, he's kind of, you know, middle of the road kind of guy, but he was not like flat out horrible. So, you know, it'd be a good story to see him come out and play well if he does indeed get to go, you know, national game on CBS. You know, it wouldn't that be a bad story.
Well, I did point out that the running backs are with Minnesota. I mean, and everybody, I think, was kind of thinking it was going to be Asiata that was going to get, you know, all the yards, but it turned out this past week to be McKinnon. Asiata, though, had to have been a fantasy beast with those three touchdowns that he had. Asiata, I think, is a rookie, if I'm not mistaken, on that club. So,
well, he may be the heir apparent to Adrian Peterson.
I don't know if
down the road.
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever. Well, I don't know if you could ever really make the comparison, but you know, I'm sure that they would love to have somebody this close that could
Put it that way.
You know,
let's put it this way: he's the first one up after, so you know, see what he does. I mean, a lot of people have said Peterson's played his last game in Minnesota, so you know, one way or the other, whether he continues his career next year or not, more than likely it's going to be on a different team. So Minnesota's clearly got to determine the future at a lot of positions. So now's their time. So. Looks
we
like they
have
two decent start anyway. Running back.
We've hit the quarter point of the season. We've hit the midpoint of the program this evening. And if there's anything on your mind out there, we want to hear from you. 347-826-9964. Jump in with us here at the Red Zone Blitz. Give us your thoughts on what you saw this past Friday. And we're talking on the field only, folks. We know a lot of stuff is going on off the field, but we're keeping it to. I like the way you put it last week there, Brandon. We're keeping it to the X's and O's of what happened from last Thursday up until last evening. We haven't even gotten to last evening yet.
No.
Before we do, I know I saved it for last for you.
Thanks.
Before we do, let's get to another shocker. Listen, I just want to look over. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to check the spread on it from last week. The Dallas Cowboys are making believers of people who are Cowboys fans in the NFC East. And right now they're tied for first with the Eagles. I think Eagles has got the – right now they've got a slight edge on them by virtue of tiebreakers, but it's irrelevant this early on. But they're 3-1 right along – right up at the top of the NFC East with the Philadelphia Eagles. They took on the New Orleans Saints and took care of them 38-17. This game, it was 24-0 Dallas at the half in this game. 31-3 at the end of the third quarter. What in the world is going on with New Orleans? We were talking about this a little bit in our very first show, Brandon, when we came on here 2 weeks ago with the Red Zone Blitz, our first production 2 weeks ago. And we were bringing up the fact that New Orleans just didn't have their act together then. We had our good buddy Carl on, and at that particular time, they were 0-2. Well, they turned things around a little bit last week, and I thought, okay, they've righted the ship. Are you kidding me? This was an absolute dominance by a Dallas Cowboys team that one just wouldn't have anticipated. Tony Romo was a fantasy nut. 22 of 29, 262, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 137.4 QB rating. Insanity. DeMarco Murray. This is what everybody's been talking about who have analyzed the Cowboys in the past 2 weeks. They're saying there is absolutely an offensive change in philosophy going on with the Dallas Cowboys. They have made a commitment to run the ball. DeMarco Murray, 24 carries, 149 yards, 2 touchdowns. Is that the difference?
Well, right now it is, certainly. You know, this is typical Dallas, though. They often start very, very strong. DeMarco Murray's been a beast. I want to see him stay healthy for 16 games. He's not been able to do that yet in his career. Tony Romo, come the end of November, loses his mind and forgets how to play football, you know, mistake after mistake. And for the Dallas Cowboys, as good as things are, Dez Bryant's been like a ghost this year so far. So they have, you know, they got some good things going, but, you know, let's just see if it keeps going and if Murray can stay healthy. But the other side of the ball, the Saints, man, they seem lost. I don't know what's different about this team. You know, they have Mark Ingram's injured right now, but I don't think that's a deal breaker for this team. Jimmy Graham's been relatively silent. I mean, he had an okay line in this game, but he's not been the force he's been, and he's not injured. Drew Brees seems all of a sudden lost. I mean, he was the stat machine. I mean, he's still putting up lots of yards, but it's not giving the results on the field that they need to have. I mean, you throw for 340, 2 touchdowns, you think you're going to have some points. 17 points doesn't quite sound like, you know, doesn't seem to line up with the production. So clearly they're playing from behind, as you pointed out, with the early start, 24 to nothing. So, you know, I think they need to fix it. I mean, Rob Ryan, the defensive coordinator down there, looked, you know, their defense looked okay last year. It just looks absolutely horrible this year.
Mm-hmm.
Repeatedly, we've said, you know, the same thing. Where is the Saints defense? You know, as you pointed out, the Dallas Cowboys were a fantasy wonder for all the fantasy owners out there, except for Dez Bryant. But everybody else who has, you know, the key guys on Dallas made out like bandits. So, you know, that's what they need to work. That's where the Saints need to be. They need to fix defense, and they need to get their rhythm back on offense. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the next game we talk about, too, with offensive rhythm. But the Saints look lost. I mean, absolutely lost right now, and I don't know what to do to fix it. I mean, I think they made a huge mistake giving Sproles away. I mean, Sproles hasn't, you know, he had that one game that, you know, set everybody on its ear. But I still think, you know, Sproles is a weapon in the punt return game, the kickoff return game. He catches the ball out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that intangibles. Yeah, he's not the best running back, you know, to hand off it. But as a change of pace guy, it's good to, you know, give him 3-4 carries a game. I don't know. The Saints didn't use him right, it seemed like, at times anyway. But I don't know. They're missing something, and that's the biggest piece that's missing.
So, I watched for the better part of a year and a half because I had Darren Sproles on different fantasy teams over the past 2 seasons. And I watched for the better part of a year and a half when he was down there with New Orleans. That New Orleans did not, for one reason or another, and I never understood it, had a commitment to Darren Sproles. They did not have a commitment to him. And I don't get it. I've never heard an explanation for it. And we can say that they made a mistake giving him up, but for some reason or another, they felt it was the right thing to do. So,
well, I think, you know, I think it came down to money for them. They had other backs, and Sproles' price tag not out of the world for a team like Philadelphia to pick him up. I believe he's in the $3 to $4 million range. You know, but they have other options down in New Orleans. And, you know, you would think it would be okay, but I don't know. Ingram being hurt, Pierre Thomas is what he is. The new rookie Robinson, you know, he's shown signs so far. I don't even know. How do you say his first name? Kihari or Kiri? But anyway.
It's Kyrie.
Kyrie Robinson. There we go.
Yeah, Kyrie Robinson.
He could be, you know, a decent back for them. I just don't know. Maybe they just didn't want to pay Sproles. I'll tell you where I think they miss him, and the only place they really did use him consistently was on punt returns.
Field
position. You know, they're getting beat on, you know, the field. I don't know. You know, that's maybe something they need to address, is get somebody else back there, you know, returning kicks. I'm not sure who's even doing it for him, to be honest with you.
Extending this conversation a bit, though, about the New Orleans Saints. Now, this week they've got Tampa Bay at home. One would think, and obviously Vegas thinks it as well at this current time, Vegas is making the Saints a 10.5-point favorite. However, when you take a look at what Tampa Bay did against the Pittsburgh Steelers last week, you got to start to wonder. I don't know if I would play that line.
I don't definitely touch the line, but I think Saints win the game.
And I was going to say, would it be fair to say that this may not be an automatic, you know, pick it up, it's a gimme?
I don't think anything, it's almost hard anymore in the NFL to call anything a gimme. You know, every time you think you got it figured out, I mean, I think you could point to the last Thursday night's game. I think everybody thought the Redskins were just going to take the Giants apart, and the Giants took them apart. I mean, it was almost an exact reversal of what everybody thought was going to happen. So, I mean, it's hard to call anything a gimme. But I think the Saints, I think they're going to have enough to deal with the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers are not the strongest offensive team. They did, you know, hang with Pittsburgh last week, but they still didn't look dominant. As we do here at the Frat House, we have multiple screens going, and we did watch the end of that game, and that last drive that they, you know, to get in there and tie that up or go ahead was impressive. But, you know, I still don't see the Saints having a big problem with them. It is in New Orleans. They're going to have a purpose. The Ryan brothers do know defense. He's going to fix it to a degree.
Thank you.
I don't know that it's going to be, you know, top of the league by the end of the year, but it'll be better. I mean, I think, you know, you probably had a bit of an aberration in this game. One other thing you need to consider going, you know, this game that we're talking about from last week is Dallas Cowboys may have had a little bit of insight into that defense.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, he was the last coordinator. That was
exactly
where Rob Ryan came from, was Dallas.
You beat me to the punch. I was actually going to bring it up before. Rob Ryan, and there have been some that have speculated that, in fact, Dallas had a little bit of an inkling as to which way New Orleans was going to be going with some of their scheme that they would be throwing at them.
I think that's fair to say.
It is. Yeah.
I think the New Orleans Saints are going to win the game. I don't know that I like the 10.5 point line or whatever it is. I think that's a little high.
I don't like it.
I don't know that it's ever going to be. I don't think it's going to be a nail biter. I think the Saints are going to win the game. I think they need to win the game. The division they're in isn't the strongest, so they're not in bad shape. I mean, the Panthers are 2-2 leading it right now, so I think they'll be okay. I think the Saints, they still could win that South, the NFC South. There's no other team. The Falcons, like we had talked about earlier, we're not sure yet where they are. I think it's, you know, it could be a three-way battle all year, and maybe
it
even Tampa hangs into it. But, you know, Tampa's in a first year of Lovie Smith. They're kind of more or less in a rebuild mode. So I don't think anybody expects Tampa to be in it all the way. But I think you're going to see a three-way fight between the Saints, Falcons, and Panthers. So I think the Saints still have a chance. They can't lose this game. They can't afford another division loss.
If we're coming back here next Tuesday night, and we're talking about a 4? Saints team at that particular time, I think at that point then, there's going to be a lot of Saints fans who are really pushing the panic alarm at that point.
Well, as we talked about too, like when we were talking about the Eagles 49ers, the Saints got to be aware of it. They're going to know they need the game. So I think you're going to see them come prepared, and they're going to win. You know, Sean Payton, their coach, is a good coach, and I think they're going to get it worked out. I don't think they're going to be the dominant force a lot of people were projecting them to be preseason. I think they might have come to earth a little bit, but I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be in it all year for the division. I don't think they're going to be in it for a wild card. I think you're going to see a lot of what you saw out of the wild cards out of the NFC be what they were last year, all out of the NFC West. That's just the best division in the NFC right now. So
right. All right. Talk about a team and that might be needing to get it together. Before we get to our last game, and that'll be last night's Monday night football game, let me throw out the number, and that's 347-826-9964. Because this might be a conversation you might want to jump in on.
Do we have to talk about this?
yeah, I hear you. I think this is one that a few people have been waiting for us to get to. And this is one actually that all three of us—Sidekick, Uncle Mark, myself—we all picked on Thursday night's Frat House Sports Show, and we all went with the Patriots. And we were all wrong.
Horribly wrong.
What in the world? The Kansas City Chiefs, yes, it was a home game for them, but are you kidding me? They had themselves a 27-0 lead just before half. By halftime, the Patriots were able to get on the board. It was 27-7 at the half. This game ended up 41-14, and for goodness sake, Jimmy Garoppolo came into the game sometime in the fourth quarter and actually maneuvered the Patriots to their final field touchdown with Rob Gronkowski with about 7:25 remaining in the fourth. Holy smokes, Brandon, this was a mess. A mess for the Patriots. I mean, certainly not a mess for the Kansas City team, who just 2 weeks ago, or just last week, let's put it this way, had their backs against the wall at 0-2, got their first win in week 3. Now they're even at 2-2. Alex Smith looked like the next coming of Joe Montana. 20 of 26, 248 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a darn near perfect QB rating, 144.4. And you layer that over Tom Brady, who, yeah, he ended up being sacked twice, but are you kidding me? It felt like he was pressured a heck of a lot more than that. 14 of 23, 159 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, and a 59.9 QB rating.
2 bad interceptions, too. Very bad, bad, bad communication between quarterback and receiver on one. I'm not even sure which receiver made the mistake on the one. The Gruden and them were blaming Edelman, but it very easily could have been LaFell. He was also in a pattern that could have ended up in the same spot, and he held up. He pulled up and kind of stopped, too. They both kind of stopped short, and Brady threw beyond both of them. So,
the problem with that was it was an obvious timing pass.
Yes, exactly, and it totally was screwed up, you know, without knowing the call, which, you know, receiver was supposed to keep moving. One of them was supposed to go there. It could have been either one. Here's the long and short of it. I'll make this as easy. I'm upset it was a bad game, but I'm not going to let it – as a fan of the Patriots, I'm not going to jump off the bridge because here's the long and short of it. We've talked about this earlier. The Chiefs needed the game more than the Patriots did after their start. You know, and we've talked about teams already that need the game more. They got a shot in the arm with getting Jamaal Charles back. Between Jamaal Charles and Nile Davis, they got two solid NFL caliber running backs who both almost Nile Davis did have a 100-yard game. Jamaal Charles had 92 and a touchdown on his first game back. So they clearly have a good rushing game. And Alex Smith, as you pointed out, awesome game. Brady does need to work on something. I don't know what it is. The timing has been off all season. They've not looked good really since the second or third game of the preseason where they were just like firing on all 8 cylinders. So they got to work on it. But here's the history of New England with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. They don't lose 2 in a row very often. I think they've only ever done it once. They're back at home this week against, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, who are coming off a bye.
Tough game, dude.
I'm not going to lie. But I bet this is my prediction. Whether they win or lose, they're going to look better. One way or the other, they're going to look better. And they're playing in a very poor division. You know, we've talked at nauseam about the Miami Dolphins and the Jets dysfunction that's been going on for years. And now Buffalo's joining the fray, seemingly giving up on E.J. Manuel 4 games into the season after drafting him very high last year, only because of a new ownership coming in and they want to try to look good. I don't buy that. This is going to end poorly for Buffalo. Kyle Orton, who's looked good at times in his NFL career, he's coming in, no preseason, no nothing. He's been there for 4 weeks. Is that really a better quarterback than E.J. Manuel? I don't buy it. So I'm basically what I'm saying is the Patriots are still going to win this division one way or the other. Whether they lose this week to the Bengals or not, they're going to be the best of the mediocrity that is the AFC East. So, yeah, I'm upset. I love Vince Wilfork's quote saying they beat us like we stole something. That
yeah,
was,
I saw that.
I mean, they got whipped on both sides that of the football, offensively and defensively. And you know what? Okay. I they're going to get a shot in the arm back, too. You know, Brandon Browner, the cornerback who played real well with Seattle last year, is coming back from a PED suspension week five. So they're getting a shot in the arm in the secondary, which has been better up until this week. That has been better this year. I'm not panicking. And, you know, clearly Brady, something's off. But they'll work on it. They will.
Okay.
He won't give up. That's my
We actually touched on this, and it's interesting because it's the second week in a row now that we're discussing this, and that is, you know, this whole issue of Tom Brady, and Tom Brady doesn't look quite right, and what's with the New England Patriots this year, and we talked about it last week, and I said basically last week right here on this program the same thing you're saying right now, and that is RELAX, folks. This is the New England Patriots. They're going to win the AFC East. However, after last night's performance, Brandon, we've been hearing it all over the media from just about everybody. In some respects, I think Tom Brady opened himself up for it at the very beginning of the season, and Uncle Mark loves to bring it up himself, that he was the one who made the comment, "I'll retire when I suck." So he's kind of opened himself up for it. And I want to play here real quick, 1 minute from this morning over at Fox Sports 1. And mind you, I'm gonna couch it right now. Look, it's Donovan McNabb, and we know what he's all about. But he's talking about Tom Brady. He's on there with Jay Glazer. Listen to the incredulosity coming from Jay Glazer.
Hello, got in there and moved the ball downfield and got the ball in the end zone. If this continues on for another 5 or 6 weeks, believe the rumblings will start that this could be Tom Brady's last year in New England. I put it out there first.
Okay.
If you don't understand.
Tom Brady's last year in New England?
It could be. If this goes on for about 6, 7 more weeks, there will be rumblings about maybe is this it for Tom Brady.
There's been rumblings every time Tom Brady has a bad game. There's rumblings up there in Boston. Oh, this guy, it's time for him to move on. Are you crazy, dude?
Listen, if you're not playing well, and we know the New England Patriots don't pay anybody. You just
get him some weapons.
So you can't do that now.
Get him some weapons. Get a better O-line.
Who are you going to go get now off the street? Nobody.
Randy,
you got to play with what he's got.
You said that Garoppolo could be better than Brady?
I'm not saying
that.
I'm saying is if they can pay somebody for cheaper and may not do the same things that you do, because we know Bill Belichick feels it's his system that gets the job done. Not the players.
It's
the system.
Tom
Brady.
Listen, man,
Randy,
it happens to everybody. Brett Favre was gone. He got out of there.
I want to ask you, Randy. Randy, you're laughing.
Now, mind
you.
Well, yeah, mind you. I think we've all come to understand that Donovan McNabb has become Fox Sports 1's Skip Bayless. Let's get it straight. That's what he is. He's a character.
You know what I think there? I think he's comparing himself to Brady because he got shown the
you
door
got it,
in
man.
Philly.
You're exactly right.
He's thinking
I couldn't agree
you know
with you
what?
More.
Here's the long and short of it. Jay Glazer was right on in what he said about the offensive line. The New England Patriots had a long-time defensive line coach, Dante Scarnecchia, retire at the beginning of the season. Bill Belichick made a decision to trade Logan Mankins, you know, prior to the season. Clearly, the line is part of the issue. And I think the reason, and you and I talked about this a little bit earlier pre-show, that Jimmy Garoppolo looked so good is they called quick timing passes. He was bang, 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 bang. This is what they're going to look at, you know, moving forward from the Patriots. You're going to see a lot of the quick no-huddle back where he's making the quick timing passes, throwing the ball in three-step drop pass. And, yeah, they may not be the deep downfield stuff we've been seeing in the past, but they will adjust. You know, and the line, offensive line, clearly needs to get better. And I'm sure Bill Belichick, as the season goes on, is going to do what he can do, you know, from a coaching point, you know, coaching point of view to, you know, get that fixed. So, you know, Belichick has a lot of the blame here on his shoulders in my book. You know, maybe, you know, his decision to get rid of Mankins wasn't the best. Maybe he was getting a little bit more than he was worth at his age. But I'll tell you what. It'd sure be nice to have him right now.
I agree with you.
I would venture a guess if Bill Belichick could go back in time and change that decision, he'd do it in a heartbeat. But he'd never admit it, but he would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, you made the comment earlier that, and you were talking about Brady, and you said Brady will make the adjustment. Brady will get things going in the right direction again. And as you were saying that, one of the things that was coming into my head, and I'm looking over the stats from last night, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, it might be Brady, but I think it also has to be a combination of the offensive coordinator or whoever's calling the offensive plays.
Maybe that would be Josh McDaniels, correct.
Even getting the quarterback coach in there, maybe even getting the running back coaches in there, even getting Belichick in there and saying, you know something, this game plan isn't working. It was not working for Tom Brady. That was apparent last night. Even with the ground game, and you got to give it to New England, they seem to try to stick with it. 16 times they tried to run that ball, but every time it just seemed to be ineffective. Yes, they picked up 75 yards, but I'll tell you something. How many times, Brandon, do you and I sit there and go, this is just not an effective running game. It's not opening up anything for them. Why do you keep going to it?
Well, I think that, you know, like you said, it's game plan. I think they couldn't adjust on the fly from what they had done. And, you know, maybe the Jimmy Garoppolo drive there at the end of the game might have been, you know, calling from the hip a little bit. And you know, clearly it was a good drive. I mean, they marched right down the field. You know, they got a lot of people involved. LaFell had a big play. Gronkowski scored a touchdown. They even had their young running back, White, in the game, and he actually looked pretty good. I don't think James White is the answer at running back, per se, because he's a little guy. He's a nice change of pace guy. I think what they need to do is do what they've done in the past, and they don't have a Kevin Falk / Danny Woodhead type where they, you know, or at least I think they do have him, they just don't seem to use him, and that's Shane Vereen. They need to do more little, you know, screen passes. For years, the Belichick lived with the screen pass, be it a wide receiver screen, be it a running back, be it a tight end, and I think they need to get back to that and do a little bit of that to get, you know, some timing plays in there, move the ball, and I think you're going to see it. They will adjust. That's what they do, and you're going to see it next week. I'm sure you're going to see a different Tom Brady and a different, you know, attack after what we watched this week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would be shocked to see a similar game plan. I think you're going to see, you know, clearly a more rhythm, quicker decision type offense.
They're making me nervous to pick them, though, I must be honest. But
it's a tough game. They are playing a good team.
I'm going to tell you right now, we already know that for Thursday night, we've got that game on the docket for all of us to pick, and that's going to be the New England-Cincinnati game. And I got to tell you right now, I haven't made my choice yet on that. That one, I'm going to have to do a little analysis on between now and Thursday night's program when we bring that one to you right here on the Frat House Sports Network. Because real
quick,
we
just
got about,
remember, they've only ever lost back-to-back games once. And they are the winningest quarterback-coach combo in the NFL history. So
we got to
don't sell them too short just yet.
We got about a minute left in the program here, and I want to do real quick.
Fast hour.
You got to be, you're not kidding. I want to go through our programming real fast. I just mentioned we'll be coming back to you here 7 p.m. Thursday evening with our Frat House Sports show, our flagship program. That'll be the 160th of them. And I just gave you a little bit of insight into some of the things we'll be talking about. You can bet it's going to be NFL heavy. Saturday, I come back to you at 2 o'clock, bringing you the best, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, bringing you the best of what we've brought to you here this past week on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And then Sunday, Uncle Mark will be back here with you as we move into NASCAR's Chase Race number 4. We've had our first set of cutdowns. Hey, who got affected, who didn't, and who's now going to be on the cutting line as we move forward to race number 7, and it'll be race 6. That'll be the next cut. You want to be here at 11 a.m. for the Race Trim Motorsports Hour tonight. Guess what? I just throw this in there because, hey, we're a sports network. Major League Baseball, we got the American League wild card game. The Oakland A's and the Kansas City Royals. Let's go Royals. First time in the playoffs in 29 years over on TBS in just about 2 minutes from now. Brandon, thank you for joining me.
Sure.
Oh, excuse me. I got through that.
You're right there.
We will be back here with you on Thursday, and we'll be back here with you next Tuesday, Brandon and I will be, for our Red Zone Blitz. Thanks very much for joining us. Catch you then.